This conference will...
Go ahead.
I just want to say a special thank you to you. This outline is incredibly long, as so many of yours are. I just want to say thank you for all the work you and probably Lydia as well put into making outlines for us every week. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It came from you, you know. From you guys gave me the idea years ago. You said, "Well, Mary Jo, your talks are so good, but maybe you should do an outline for them." So that's what started this. But yeah, it's a blessing. And in fact, I know Marion Culhane sent it out to our organization this week and said, "You guys don't even have to read these books. Mary Jo does it for you." But they're great books, and you know, by all means, feel free to read them. But I do give you a lot of data and a lot of information from them to help you as if you never did read the books, because I know reading isn't one of people's favorite pastimes anymore, like it should be, but it's not. But so as much as I can share with you and you absorb, that's awesome. So thank you for the kudos, but thank you guys for giving me the ideas to do it. So, okay, so let me give you some ideas, too. I read that in reviewing and putting this second group you know, together for you, you could see why I didn't want to put this all in one week, because it was massive amount of information and all so good. I came to the conclusion that I was going to go out and buy a number of these books because there are people like my pastor of my church and some other people that I'm really interested in getting this book in their hands because it really highlights so many communication breakdowns that we have in our life. And I recognized in myself as well, as I went through it, of course, things just, you know, kept highlighting to myself about, you know, especially some of my past, and I'll talk to you a little about that when we talk about the practices, but how great it is to just see the growth that we've, you know, gone through as people, and yet we have so much further to go, to know we're still green and growing, and we're still, you know, trying to improve on the things that are out there that we know we can do better, which is what I call everything. So it's about just continuing to get better at what we do so we can create the best possible results. And this book was just filled full of great ideas for that. So the first half of the book we talked about was kind of foundational, basically laying the foundation. The second half is practices that anyone can do to help connect with other people. So this is where you really want to take your highlighter and work through the outline as I go through it quickly, because, again, it's like 8 pages long, and I will get through the whole thing in our call today. But the important thing for you is which ones really stand out for you. If you listen to the call and get your outline and take a highlighter so that you really know what you need to work on, because each one of us is so unique and we all have different needs that we need to work on, and some of us don't even recognize them until we read a book like this that triggers it as a need. I know a lot of speakers out there today, including myself. I was a speaker ever since I was a kid, because I was president of my class and president of student council and president of almost anything I ever joined. I was just kind of that natural leader that came out, or people just were afraid of me, so they didn't run against me. But that happened in my senior year in high school. It was kind of funny, but it was it was an idea of that. When you've given so many talks, sometimes you just assume that you're a good speaker, and that's such a really bad thing to do, because we know what assume means. So it's just, you know, our concept is that we want to find ways of improving ourselves, and just because you do it a lot doesn't mean you're that good at it. And I really can say that I really wasn't very good at it for many, many years, and I feel like I'm getting better, but I have plenty of room for improvement as well. But some of the things they mention, of course, I go, wow, that's me. That's what I've always been doing. So it's kind of fun to see both sides of it. You know, it's not just about the strengths you have, but it's also about the weaknesses, too. So let's talk about those practices that you can put in place. And there are 5 chapters, so chapter 6 through 10, and each one deals with a separate practice and then has a lot of things to work on within it. The first one, it talks about connectors connect on common ground. And this is such a beautiful thing, because we always talk, even in, you know, the natural selling, the book The Natural Selling by Michael Oliver, we talk about the discovery period and how we try to get people so we can figure out what their common ground is. I mean, the commonality. We want to find some information that really draws us together. Social marketing on the Internet is all about common grounds. In fact, that's the number one thing they tell you to do, and we're going to get into that as one of our strategies in my Marketing Mania class. But the intriguing thing is one of the foundational truths of social marketing is to find commonalities, common ground. And that's why they tell you to express yourself in terms of what your interests are, so you can be on a, you know, on an interest page or a blogging with people of the similar interests. And that's establishing that common ground is so critical. The other part that comes up in network marketing about common ground is the idea that if somebody gives you a referral, you know, referrals are so incredibly important, because if you just call somebody cold, you have no connection. You have no common ground until you start asking questions and doing part of the discovery. But it's hard sometimes to discover when people aren't in trust of you, because they don't know you from Adam. So they don't know if this is just some crazy person calling or what it might be. So the importance of a referral is, you know, the introduction of your talk can be, hi, this is Mary Jo Hilliker. Is this John? John, how are you today? I know you probably don't know who I am, but Sarah from my church, and whatever, Sarah Brown from my church gave me your name. And how do you know Sarah? And then you can just you start talking about Sarah. And see, I spend a little bit of time just in discussion about Sarah, you know, because that's our common ground. And so he can laugh and tell a few stories. And all of a sudden, you've broken down that barrier. So common ground is very critical in connecting. And you can see I just gave you so many different instances in networking and multi-level marketing that where it would apply. So we're looking for common ground, and one of the things you have to realize is that you can never find common ground if you focus on yourself, because you're going to always be talking about who? Yourself. So you need to learn about how do I communicate with other people. And one of the concepts of communicating with other people is also learning the four personality quadrants. And Terry Felber in the book Am I Making Myself Clear did a great job. And that's just a reference point for some of you who feel like maybe you need some work in that area. Is, you know, understanding their different personality quadrants, to really understand that people come from a different place. And that's why I do that training in my pathway class, because I think it's so critically important for us to be able to understand that that exists as a roadblock to establishing common ground. So we need to recognize it up front, and then we can go into the other person's quadrant. We can join them in their quadrant so that we can understand and find that commonality. Because even your method of communication or your style of communication, if it differs too greatly from another person, you're going to have a hard time finding common ground. So understanding personality quadrants is really important too, so you know how to enter into a person's quadrant to help, again, release those barriers and find that commonality. And relationships build on agreements, not disagreements. And you all know that by looking at your own marriage or your own relationship with your kids, that the disagreements aren't building the relationship. Agreements build relationships. That's why we have mission statements in families. He listed the top four barriers to finding common grounds, and one of them is that we make assumptions. We walk into a situation and assume. We make generalizations about people. And he says all miscommunications are the result of differing assumptions. So be careful of and avoid assumptions, because when you make assumptions about people or prejudgments, you're going to have a hard time finding that commonality. Number two is arrogance. When you walk into a relationship with arrogance or a room with arrogance, I mean, arrogance is really about, you know, I'm more important than you are, and then you don't even make the effort to find the common ground. And he brought in Archie Bunker, and I think we have a lot of people like Archie Bunker in our society. They're very highly opinionated, narrow-minded, and bigoted, and expect everyone to meet them on their terms. I think that this, when I was reading through this, my first thought was about our political scene. You know, we have such a nightmare out there today, and I don't know whether maybe it's always been a nightmare. Maybe I'm just more touchy to it today, but I really find that so many of my Christian authors who say Christians should stay out of politics, really, it really makes some sense to me today, more so than ever before. There's so much self-righteousness involved in all of that realm that it's very difficult to, and very little compromise. So it's difficult to see where that goes, but I want to call the whole scene almost looks Archie Bunkerish to me. So, and I loved he gave the quote, "I talk in English, you hear in dingbat." And of course, that's when Archie was talking to his wife, and that's not derogatory about the wife. That's derogatory about Archie Bunker. He's the guy that's got the problem. So arrogance will get you nowhere. Indifference is just a concept that you don't care enough. And my comment was not John Maxwell's, but was to get a life. Why are we here? Our life, we're here to interact with people, to build relationships. That's the core of why we're here. So we really want to put other people first. We want to, and when you do that, watch how your life changes. It's incredible. It's kind of like you could never outgive the Lord. The same thing about giving to other people. You can never outgive other people ever. It's you want to be a giver, because the law of attraction means the more you give, the more people are going to give back to you. So it's part of that law of attraction. And of course, indifference is just another form of selfishness. It really is. When we start being indifferent to other people. And some people might say, well, Mary Jo, you just said about politics. And I said, well, you can be indifferent towards politics, but don't be indifferent to people. People and politics are two distinct things. So so you want to make sure that you show honor to people and become caring for them. And then the fourth thing that stops us from achieving common grounds is control. And that means that we want to be in the power, and it's important for us that we know that it's collective power, not our power. And the importance of that for leaders is huge, because leaders tend to want to always show their power and show their hand and be in control, because they feel that's part of what leadership's about, when in effect it's about the collective knowledge of the entire group. And how do I tap in and create the best possible results? Well, I can only create the best possible results when I have everybody contributing and get contribution from each person. So yeah, the other comment here is also, don't pride yourself on being an insider. And that's one of the things I looked at that as I was reading the book, and I said, that's one of the things I always have done. I spend a lot of time at Manatech headquarters, and when people try to tell me things that are coming up or what the incentive is, I say, don't share it with me unless you want me to share it with the world. Because I said, I never pride myself in being an insider. I don't want to, because I really truly believe just because I'm presidential doesn't give me any rights. What it is if this is information that's valuable for me to know, then I feel it's valuable for the regional directors and everyone to know. It's not just about who I am as presidential director. Another reason why I share every year, I would share all the things that happened in Hawaii at the presidential reception. And I got some flack from Manatech headquarters a number of times for doing that, because they wanted to see it. So, well, that's really just for presidentials. And I said, no one ever told me it was confidential. If you say it's confidential from stage, then I can make a choice whether to sit through the meeting or not. But unless you tell me it's confidential, I feel that information I get is everybody's has a right to have that same information. So don't treat yourself. Don't pride yourself in that. That I think that pride comes from insecurity. So, and it's, I know something you don't know and all that. Oh, gosh. I mean, I can think of 5-year-olds and 7-year-olds when I was growing up that did that kind of stuff. So definitely it impairs your ability to connect. So those four things, look at those. Where are you in terms of making assumptions, judgment, arrogance, indifference, and control? If any of those factors are important or something in your life, then highlight that, and that's you put that on your to-do list to work on it. Availability, obviously availability, we need to choose time to spend with other people. And too busy is not an excuse. It means... what? It's another statement of indifference. So it's another statement of selfishness. So availability is critical. And I've been working very hard. That's a big thing I circled for myself, because I've been working really hard on it. And I watched the different shift in my life because I stay out of being too busy. Some people look at my life and say, how do you accomplish all you do, Mary Jo? I said, well, Lydia helps. But I said, people are still number one in my life in everything that I do. It's like I always try to be available for people no matter what. Listening, we know listening is a huge requirement, and I don't need to really, we've done trainings on listening alone, but work on that. If it's not something that you're good at, most of us need work, even if we are good at it, because we can be great, and our goal should be to be great. So, but it's incredibly important for us to involve ourselves outside of our own self-interest. And when we don't listen to people, then again, we get back into that selfish mode of indifference, or I'm only important, or arrogance. All those things fall into place. So anytime you're willing to listen, you're going to be able to establish common ground, and that's where you're going to find it. Ask questions is a great way to have a conversation. He even mentioned in his book, FORM, F-O-R-M, and all of you remember with that. It's family, occupation, recreation, and motivation, or there's different things for M, mission. But and one of the guys said his favorite question was why. People would say, well, I just moved over, and you go, why? Oh, I just got a new job. He said, oh, you did? Why? And because why requires a substantive answer. It's not a superficial. It gets into what was the thinking behind it. Why did you do what you did? It's just, and that was one of his favorite questions. Thoughtfulness is huge in terms of common grounds and connecting. The important thing there is that you always want to be ready and willing to support other people. One of my favorite people on the face of the earth that does this all the time. In fact, I can honestly tell you that every single time I've been around this man for the last 10 years of my life, he has never, ever failed at the end of a conversation that we've had to say to me, Mary Jo, how can I support you? And it's just awesome. And his name is Brian Klemmer. I mean, it's just how he honors people every single time. And it's just an incredible feeling. I when he first did it to me, I kind of walked away feeling, well, this is kind of silly. I'm coming to your trainings and you want to support me, you know? It's like, but it was awesome. I mean, it caused me some uneasiness, but it really made me feel great that he cared that much about me, that he was willing to step out and do something to support me. If I had something I needed, he was ready to step up. And there's a busy man, right? But what an impact it leaves. So maybe it's something you can add to your panoply of communication with people, and you can say, is there a way I can support you? I'll share with you around Manatech. Oh, I know we're going to run out of time. There's just so much good stuff. But I share with you around Manatech, there was a gal who bought an all-star pack. I worked with her family, and she was really anxious and a high anxiety person. And I tried to calm, she was very committed, and she had money issues, but she gathered the money together, bought an all-star pack, and this is not one of my sign-ups, but somebody from my pastor's wife. And then she panicked, and she decided she couldn't do it, it just wasn't going to work, blah, blah, blah. And we kind of walked through it, and she wanted to send her all-star pack back, and so she ended up doing that. And I sent her an email, and I said, you know, Jobetha, I still am totally committed to working with you. Your family needs so much help with, grocery shopping, eating habits, everything else. I said, I do all those services for free, so let's have lunch. And notice, what can I do to support you? So it was never about Mary Jo signing somebody up and, quote, unquote, getting any monetary reward from my relationship with her. It was always about, God brought you in my life. I don't know what the reason is, but the high anxiety level was just too much for me, and it was like, I need to help her. There's a reason she's in my life. So thoughtfulness, you can never be too thoughtful. Humility is a big one. When you come across that with a sense of arrogance and you're not humble, you don't have a humble heart. People read that so fast. And so that's something for me that was huge over the years. I still grapple with it, but being a lawyer for so many years, there wasn't a lot of humility in my arena at all. In fact, it was like shark eat shark, dog eat dog. It was unbelievable. And I don't know that I ever met too many lawyers. I don't know that if I thought about it, I really haven't put a lot of thought into it, how many I would consider humble. I probably would over, 15, 20 years of practice, probably might come up with one name, maybe, if I'm lucky. But the incredible thing is that's our nature of our being. It's the fruit of the Spirit. It's important for all of us to accept humility in our lives and adopt it in our lives. Humility means knowing and using your strengths for the benefit of others on behalf of a higher purpose. That's great. A big definition there. Next is adaptability, being able to shift from our world into theirs. And again, that means that we're flexible. That doesn't mean that you're flexible in your value system. It just means that you're flexible in terms of entering somebody else's world to have a better understanding of them and what they've gone through. It gets to the point I make often about everyone has something of value to give to you, but you have to be open to receive. So the openness there of being able to adapt to fit in their world to be able to find out what they have that can be so helpful for you. And then he gave us four pointers at the end of the chapter. He said four pointers to help you become a better connector, okay, in terms of this common ground type thing. And there's four questions. And it's ask, do I feel what you feel, before you ask, do you feel what I feel? You notice how often we say, do you feel what I feel? And the next one is, I see what you see, before do you see what I see? The second one in all these, do I know what you know versus do you know what I know? Do I know what you want before do you know what I want? And again, you can see where is every single one of those trade-offs in those questions is who's the focus. In the first one, the other person's the focus. In the second one, it's you're the focus. It's important for me to get my point across is what's in the second one. So you want to always be in a posture where it's important for you to understand. And I tie into this the Stephen Covey book. If you've read Seven Habits of Most Highly Effective People, one of the chapters is seek first to understand and then to be understood. Right on, people. That's just like the hammer hits the nail on the head. We're out there to understand first and then to be understood. So the focus is on what? Feeling what they feel, seeing what they see, knowing what they know, knowing what they want. That's where our focus needs to be, not about us and our communication. And John made a comment in the end of the book, a chapter that was really great. He says when he really wants to get to know somebody, he asks them three questions. What do you dream about? What do you sing about? And what do you cry about? Now, what is true about all of those questions? You get it? It's all about people's heart. It's like what's going on inside their heart. And so that's where John wants to focus. He wants to focus on what's happening in somebody's heart, you know, because that's the pure gist of the person is what's going on in our heart. Okay, so that ends our first chapter, which is connectors connect on common ground. Secondly, connectors do the difficult work of keeping it simple. Wow, I can only admit to failing at this 101 times. I remember in some of my early talks in Manatech, I used to get very complicated and go on and on and on. I could wax for hours, and some people just absolutely love my presentations, but boy, oh boy, they sure were filled with lots of stuff. And they might have been effective for some, but there are a lot of people that aren't going to sit through an hour and a half talk. So we need to learn how to become simpler. And my problem with the way I was doing my talks was even though people would respond to me sometimes and saying, Mary Jo, could you shorten it? Could you make it like less? I would look around and I'd say, how can you argue with success? Because we signed up so many people. I mean, but I don't know if I didn't sign them up out of overwhelm versus anything else, But the important thing is that we need to really learn how to keep it simple. Today, I don't give any talks I always want to leave time for question and answers at the end, so 40 minutes, 50 minutes maybe, max, because I just really think we can communicate all we need to get their spark, their interest, and intrigue in that period of time, and then let them get answers to meet their needs. So it's important to address those. So we need to keep it simple, the power of little words. And we are taught that big words make it complicated, so we look at, oh, that's another thing. And this was huge for me as a lawyer coming out of practicing for years. You develop this phenomenal vocabulary that you only use in the legal world because you're showing off. I mean, it's a big show-off. It's about intellectually competing with the people around you, and you wanted to make sure that you could intimidate them as fast as possible in a negotiating setting so that you could win. Because intimidation was huge in the legal area. Well, when I found myself outside the legal arena, I mean, all of a sudden intimidation didn't play any role. I mean, sometimes I tried to use it, but it was very ineffective. And then the other times, I just realized that a lot of my vocabulary, people weren't understanding. In fact, Lydia still gives me a hard time on some legalese that pops up. But I just tried to take down a notch that vocabulary, and it wasn't about telling people I wasn't intelligent. It was more about trying to communicate with people. If you want to be a better communicator, you got to keep it simple. You don't want to lose people in the process. Some teachers sometimes they put themselves up on pedestals because they are the know-it-alls, and that's when they lose their student base. The language used in his book, the measure of a good teacher is not what she knows, but rather what the students know. So how good are you at transferring the knowledge to the students in the room? And that takes humility, and it takes keeping it simple, not being over people's heads. When John uses quotes, they must fill the following requirements. He says every time he uses quotes in any of his speeches, he wants to say humor, heart, hope, and or help. So if you think of the four H's, anytime you're using quotes, because he wants to use quotes as an emphasis, as a emotional experience, whether it's laughter, crying, whatever it is, or hopeful, inspirational. So that's how he uses quotes in his talks, and you can take that down as an important element of giving talks yourself. And again, all of John's book is not just about connecting in front of big audiences, it's also one-on-one. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "To be simple is to be great." That's a good quote, too. The art of simplicity has five guidelines, and these are the five he sets up in his book. He says, number one, talk to people, not above them. And that's what we just talked about. Talk to people, not above them. So there's no need to self. A communication, a relationship with somebody is not about self-promotion. And some of you sit back and go, well, Mary Jo, but I want them to trust me that I really understand my nutrition, and so I have to promote myself. And I go, why? Be totally honest with them. Tell them for the last 5 years you've been studying nutrition, and here are some of the things that you've discovered. Isn't that gentle and soft? Instead of you trying to hammer them what they have to do because this, this, and this, and you know everything, and you know, just be honest. Talk about what your past is. And for some people, they go, well, Mary Jo, how do I sell somebody then if I'm brand new? And you go, great. You say, you know what? I just started in this field, and I came across an incredible breakthrough science that I know will make a huge difference in my family's health. So I obviously want to go out and share it because I want everybody to get the understanding about this breakthrough technology. See how much fun that is? Again, and then, you know, people, they're so afraid of being honest. They fail to recognize that honesty is always, what do we call it? The best policy. Honesty is always the best policy. And so change your languaging around that. And part of the fault that we carry with us in network marketing is that we've been training people to do this. You've probably heard the fake it until you make it scenario. I never got it. Every time somebody would teach that, I remember on my early stages in networking, I was like, fake it till you make it. There's just something wrong about that. You know, and so I just couldn't do, you know, and people would say, well, call yourself presidential. I said, I can do that. I can say presidential to be or presidential in waiting or presidential because that's where I'm going. But I'm not going to go out and introduce myself to a new person that I am a presidential. I'm not going to lie. You know, I mean, there's certain things that you just out of integrity is a very costly step to take. So anyway, so talk to people, not above them. Number two, get to the point before your listener starts saying, so what is the point? Right? You don't want to lose your audience before you even get started. So make sure that you're, you know, getting to the point. You could even, you know, when you're doing your outline, you can say, what is it that I want them to know and what is it that I want them to do? Because those two things are critically important. Remember, we talked about absolutely you want to action-packed. You want to get them led down the road to take action. So you want to make as great an impact as you can as few words as possible. It's when you get too wordy and you carry it out too long that people lose track of what's the point. And when somebody says that in an audience, you've lost them. And then when you want to make a point, he suggests that you reiterate it. He says the first time you say something, it's heard. The second time, it's recognized. And the third time, it's learned. So, you know, inform, illuminate, illustrate. So you really, when there's a specific point that's really major to your whole talk, you want to make sure that you just don't mention it once, that it comes across really strongly throughout the entire talk. So you're multiple times that you're saying that specific point. You want to always be clear. And this is cute because he said, ask yourself if you were playing with a puzzle and you only had an hour to finish it, would you want the person with the puzzle to hide the box top from you? Right. Exactly. You know what kind of puzzle he's talking about, jigsaw puzzle, right? Anyway, it's the idea is that we don't need to hide things from people. We don't have to be secretive. We don't have to play games with the audience, whether it's one person or many. When you start doing that, people are going to lose interest. People want to hear clarity. They want to be succinct and concise. And you have so many different listening skills in the audience. When you start trying to play games with them, you're going to lose a lot of them because they don't fit in that specific category to whom you're trying to relate. And they may not be as intellectually charged as you are, so all of a sudden they're going to be lost because you've lost them in your conversation. So you want to be very clear. And sometimes you can even ask the audience or the person you're talking to, do you have any questions about what we've been talking about? Have I made myself clear? Is there something that I've missed? Or do you have an issue with anything that I've said? You know, so you can make sure there's clarity. Many ways to ensure clarity when you're dealing with people one-on-one. A little bit harder when you're in a huge audience. And say less. If you speak shorter and more succinctly, people will remember it better and longer. Don't fall in love with being on stage. And so many speakers do that. They end up just loving to be in front of people that they end up on stage and they thrive there, but the audience doesn't thrive. And remember, it's all about the audience, not about you. The third chapter was connectors create experience everyone enjoys. So you want to make your experience enjoyable. In fact, I'll never forget when I was doing my talks in Manitech for years, traveling around the country, and people, and every once in a while somebody would come and say, Mary Jo, I never realized we could use humor. You bring in all these jokes, and you can't, and I'm sitting there going, excuse me? Couldn't use humor? You know, I said, my whole philosophy about life is if you can't have fun at it, then don't do it, right? I mean, you want to have joy in your life. So joy comes across in how you communicate. So make sure that when you're communicating, you're entertaining, you're energetic, you're funny. Those are typically when you talk to people and say, who are your favorite speakers you've ever heard, they're going to use those kind of words in describing them. Speakers they don't like, the word is typical, is going to be boring. So how to be interesting, try to do as many of these seven things as you can. Number one, take responsibility for your listeners. There are no bad audiences, just bad speakers. So capture people's attention by always having them in your mind. So it's always about what is my listener hearing? What does he need to hear? What is he hearing from me? So it's your job to keep that audience interested. And I had a fun time. I'll tell you a story about being in Mexico because it's so funny. I was in Mexico and at one of my presentations in Guadalajara. Of course, they were being translated. And I was, and I consider myself funny. I tell jokes. I tell stories. But there's a gentleman that came in, and they were, of course, translating. And he was an older man, and he sat in the aisle. And I just watched him, and he was, because I keep an eye on my audience, so I know that I'm connecting. That's really crucial for me as a speaker. I've spoken so much that I know I have a sense of that, and I really focus on the audience because the content is so, is something that I know so well. But I saw this one gentleman, and do you know that, like, two-thirds, I saw him, he was nodding off, and I wasn't going to capture him. He just came in exhausted. And I wasn't going to recapture him. Everybody else was on the edge of their chair having fun, laughing with me doing it. But this one guy was nodding off. And do you know that two-thirds through my speech, he fell over out of his chair onto the floor in the aisle. And everybody was afraid he had a heart attack. And I was like, no, I've been watching him go to sleep for the last 20 minutes. And sure enough, that's all happened. But so, even if you capture your audience, sometimes you're not going to capture everybody. So don't. He used the language cemetery communication, and that's like speaking to what? In a cemetery. He said, lots of people out there, but no one's listening, right? You want to make sure that you capture their attention. So draw them in. Creating positive, memorable experiences does more to connect than anything else. And John even brought up the fact in his family, he was out there one time talking about, going to New York City with his family, and he said he took after New York City, he wanted to do something special. Again, memorable, remember creating what? Memorable experiences. So they all got rickshaws, power bicycle-driven rickshaws, and to make it memorable, he handed the guy a 50. He says, he had him a $50 tip, and he said, we want to make it a race. There are three of them. So they had the race, and oh my gosh, they almost tipped over, they made a memorable experience. So that sounds like something I would do as well, but not that it could be a little dangerous, but the idea that you want to make sure they remember. And that's make it a memorable experience. So put something into your talk that you're going to say, when they walk away from this, everybody's going to know and they're going to remember that they heard this today. So some of you as speech writers, you can say, what did I do in my talk? And you're going to change perhaps some things that you talk about because you're not saying anything that is memorable for them or leaving them with something significant to remember. The next, communicate in their world. And this is interesting. There's a story in the book that I wanted to share with you. It was when he was a kid growing up, he said fathers typically didn't share in parenting duties. Of course, that was true in my parents' era as well. And but in today's era, it's a little different. And there was a time when a woman was changing diapers, and the man who she was married to, a guy who was obsessed with baseball, and the baby started to cry. The lady had spent the entire day taking care of the child, and she was exhausted. So she asked the husband to change the son's diaper, and the husband said, "I don't know how to change a baby." The husband trying to get out of the job, right? And the wife's response was, And I remember, this is a wife who took care of the kids and a husband who was obsessed with baseball. So the wife said, look, Buster, you lay the diaper out like a diamond, you put second base on the home plate, you put the baby's bottom on the pitcher's mound, hook up first and third, and slide home underneath. And if it starts to rain, the game ain't called. You just start all over again. I thought that was darling. Hopefully you guys enjoy that. I thought it was really precious. But that's just an idea of what? Relating to somebody in their world. Right? She knew her husband liked baseball, and if she could somehow tie into changing a baby's diaper to baseball, he would get intrigued. So, and I'm sure he enjoyed that too. But you have to know how to get out of your own world to get into somebody else's as well. So you want to make sure that you do that. You want to make sure that you remember that people don't remember what we think is important. They remember what they think is important. And Terry Jordan, who is a speaker, trainer, and author, she said that on the average, prospects retain only half of what we tell them. Half of what they tell them. Now, remember, this is a networker. On the average, prospects retain only half of what we tell them. Before an hour has passed, they lose 10% of the little they originally knew. After sleeping on it, guess what? Another 20% evaporates. By the time the breakfast rush has subsided, they've avoided two near collisions on the freeway, found notes on their desk from their bosses, and they have forgotten another 10%. So the entire time we have assumed a prospect has been thinking about our proposal, he or she has been forgetting about it. So I guess this makes it crystal clear to me, too, why we always tell people you want to try to close people the night they come to a meeting. Because if you realize that this goes on for them, you'll know that you'll lose them if once they leave your world and you leave the why it's important for them. Okay? I like the language, too. Talk at me and you'll talk alone. Talk to me and I will listen. Talk about me and I'll listen for hours. Right? What's people's favorite topic? Themselves. So if you talk about them, you're going to capture them. So always include that big inclusionary language in your presentations to help draw them in, especially one-on-one. You just have it. Okay? Number three is capture people's attention from the start. Start is critical. That's why people talk about giving presentations, what you say at the beginning, what you say at the end are the two most important things that you ever say, because those are the two most highly remembered. But the other aspect of it is what you say at the beginning, you're either going to capture them or you're going to lose them, and you want to make sure that you capture them. When you go to speak in a different town, you might start talking about something about the town, right? You might mention something about, you know, how great the town was or what's going on in the town. You can talk about the news. I typically, when I travel, I try to get a local newspaper. So every time when I travel, what happens to me is I talk about specifically some information that came out in the news in that town that week. Or so it's fun for me to know that I'm on top of what's happening locally with the people, and people appreciate that, because all of a sudden it's not like you're just in another town. And you understand, when you travel a lot and do speeches in different places, that's what you are. You become like a traveling salesman. You're carrying your bag and you're walking in from one place to the next. Well, make people feel important. So put an importance on your surroundings. Another way he said you could do it is introduce yourself. So in front of a big audience, you could say, hi, my name's Mary Jo, what's yours? And then everybody in the audience starts screaming out their names. And it's just a fun thing. Relax. You want to make sure you have the posture on stage of one who wants to converse with them, not talk to him. And, of course, John Maxwell does that. He doesn't even stand behind podiums or any of that stuff anymore. He always wants a stool because he brings a stool up to the front of the stage and he sits. And he feels that helps breed more connectiveness between him and the audience. So people feel like they're a part, that he's a part of them. And I remember when he did that when he came and spoke at Manifest one year, same thing. He says, begin with humor. And one of his stories, he was a keynote speaker at a banquet. And when he finally got up to speak, it was going on and on and on. When he finally got up to speak, he opened it with the following story. He said, at 8,578 words, President William Henry Harrison's inaugural address was the longest ever. He read it on a cold, raw, inaugural day, refusing to wear either hat or coat. The cold he caught that day turned into pneumonia. He died 1 month later. Then Maxwell said, as a speaker, I have learned a lesson from this bit of history. I will remain dressed, and I promise you, my speech will be short. And that cracked up everybody. So it's just, but he loved, that was just a concept of how you can add humor into, you know, the beginning of a talk so that people right away are you know, relaxed. You're setting them back. You're causing them to break down that barrier that they may have or preconceptions they might have. Create a sense of anticipation. He says, always at the beginning of a speech, make sure you let them know they're going to learn something. And you can even say, you're about to learn something. Now turn to your neighbor and tell them that. So they could look at each other, I'm about to learn something. Okay, so everybody gets the stage set right. I think that's kind of a cute idea as well. All of these are great ideas in giving talks. Activate your audience. It is easier to communicate with people who are highly energetic and active, so you want to make sure your audience is active, whether they're taking notes, you want to look at them and see, are they leaning, are they making eye contact, are they nodding with you, are they laughing with you, are they applauding? Those are the kind of things. If your audience isn't active, you're in trouble. That means your retention rate is even going to be less than what we talked about earlier. So you want to make sure that you have an active audience. And how do you get an audience active? You can ask questions. You can get people moving. You can re-energize, get people to jump out of their chairs and do some jumping jacks, sit back down. You can ask people to interact with each other. Just like he said, he says, now turn to your neighbor and tell them that. So you're getting people to interact. Do you notice some speakers who do that? They're doing it with a purpose. It's done absolutely with a purpose because they know that if you activate your audience, you're going to have more connection with your audience. Okay, the next one, 5, say it so it sticks. All good speakers leave at least one thing with the audience. So think about that. They want to make sure that you walk away with one bit of something when you hear them talk. There's examples in history like Patrick Henry, give me liberty or give me death. Nathan Hale, I regret that I have but one life to give for my country. Abraham Lincoln, a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Winston Churchill, never, never, never give up. That sounds like Jet as well. John F. Kennedy, of course we know his famous one, ask not what the country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And Martin Luther King Jr., I have a dream. So we recognize all these things that were left with us by people. We want to leave something with people, you know, and find a way to be original out there so that you can really do it. And use humor in your things. Sometimes you can use a shocking statement or a statistic that will stick with people. An example for Manitech, I just gave you a couple in the outline. For if you're going to talk about Manitech and the Give for Real program, 5 million children die every year from malnutrition, making it the number one killer in our world. That's huge. That's a statistic that is huge, that stays with people. Nutrition. Sometimes when I talk about nutrition, I've been tending to talk to people a lot about this, and I get more and more great reactions from it, so I'm using it more often now. We were created, when our bodies were created on this planet, as hunter-gatherers, we're created to eat in order to live. Today, we live to eat. We can't wait for our next meal. And people just love, they love that. They go, that's, you know, Mary Jo, that's so true, you know. But again, I tie it back to our historic times as hunter-gatherers, and then I go, look at us today. We live in order to eat. It's a big shift, but that's just a concept for you to play with. And you think of your own, but a shocking statement or statistic will cause people, and they'll grab onto it, and they'll remember it. Say things in an interesting way. You always want to be, of course, interesting. And learn to pause, especially immediately after you say something of significance. The pregnant pause is a critical part of any presentation. And then the 6th element he wrote down, or 7, he has 7 things that you want to be adding to help yourself in this enjoyable experience. The 6th thing is be visual. Most people learn visually. That means you have a PowerPoint or slides or something like that. Seven is tell stories. And we always go, stories sell. So you always want to tell stories, you know. And that's, our neurologists say our brains are programmed to grab onto stories. Be the communicator you want to hear. I attached to the outline a list of Sonia Hamlin's how to talk so people listen. And you can see the list of different characteristics. And what I would suggest is just go through those and see, are there ones that you need to work on for yourself? Because it's obvious which list and which person you want to choose to listen to, but which ones do you need to work on for you? And be the person with whom you want to connect. Remember the law of attraction. If you want to connect people who are honest and high credibility and hardworking people, then what do you have to show? You got to show those characteristics. So you just got to make sure that you are up there making that connection, making that, being that person that you want to connect with, so that you're attracting that person with the law of attraction. Fourth chapter was connectors inspire people. Now, motivated people versus non-motivated people. They did a study and they found out that non-motivated people are 40% less performance, perform at a 40% lower rate than motivated people. So do you want to have motivated people or non-motivated? That's really incredibly great, those statistics show. And here's another one. Motivated employees are 87% less likely to leave an organization compared to an unmotivated employee. Those are huge statistics. So what do you? How do you know how to motivate people? How do I inspire people? Well, you can first look at your life and look at people who motivated you and figure out what did they do and what was the difference. Then he gives us a formula in the book about, it's an inspiration equation. He goes, what they know plus what they see plus what they feel equals inspiration. So it's about giving them information so they know more, what they see, their visual, and how they feel. You add those three together in a synergistic way, and you're going to create tremendous inspiration in people. So inspirational speakers are ones that give knowledge, but also present a visual as well as a feeling side to it. And that threesome is what builds the inspiration in people to take action. So what people need to know, you can just, you know, non-connectors think about information in the context of connecting. People need to know you're on their side. So what do people need to know? You're on your side. You're a supporter. You're there to support them. You want to, the communicator is ability to connect with feelings, desires, wishes, fears, and passions of their listeners. The pathos is the most important part of any presentation. Your ability to connect with feelings, desires, wishes, fears, and passions of their listeners. And how do you do that? People need to know you understand them and are focused on them. So you want to always be making sure that they understand you're focused on them. People take actions for their reasons, not yours. Another great reason why when we invite people to meetings, we want to make sure it's by their terms. Oh, I can't wait for you to come to see Ben Carson. He's a great guy. You need to come hear him. No, no, no. When I went and I talked to the people when I dropped off these invitations, I talked about who Ben Carson was and how he touches lives and the contribution he makes in our society and what a great mission he has. And he's so inspirational, I'm sure anyone who comes will feel totally inspired, no matter where their walk is today, because he came from such a meager background. And it's inspirational to hear him. So those are the kind of things I shared with the people when I draw. I didn't just say, hey, this guy's in town, come see him. I wanted to, again, as little time as I had, I wanted to make it effectual. So it's, I wanted to build in there their reason for showing up, not my reason for having them come. Connectors speak inspirational language. How do you know that? Ask these questions. What are they thinking? What are they saying? And don't forget that only 7%, I left a blank there, of our communication is actually in words. Tone is 38% and body language is 55%. Remember, we learned that last week. So only 7% of our communication is the words we actually say. So, you know, it's always about what are they thinking, what are they saying, what are they doing? What activities? Read their body language, right? People need to know you have a high expectation of them. That's really important, that we have a high expectation. What people need to know? They need to know that you understand them and are focused on them, and number two, that you have a high expectation of them, right? And Abe Lincoln heard a great pastor speak one time, and they asked, did you like the speech? Was it terrific? He goes, oh, it was brilliantly conceived, biblical, relevant, and well presented. But was it great? His answer was, no. It failed because he did not ask us to do something great. Even Abe Lincoln understood the critical importance is to get people to take action. So anytime you communicate with people, it's not just about getting to know them, understanding, focused on them, showing the empathy, being a part of them. I think people that fail to close or fail to go into closing, that's their problem. They can live in that first arena for hours, but they fail to get the closing because they never take the next step. That people need to know you have expectations of them. And what's the expectation? For them to take action to help solve the health issues of their family and themselves, or help to be a part of this incredible social entrepreneurship that we're all involved in today, or to help financially create a better tomorrow for themselves and their family. So I have an expectation that you're going to do that. So you want to make sure that you always believe in people, Because, you know, when you have expectations of people taking action, that just shows you believe in them, that they're capable of doing it. What people need to see is your conviction. They need to see your heart, that you have your steel, not tin, that when water hits you, it doesn't show emptiness, right? It's the inside that's important. Words alone don't inspire. It's where's the heart? You want to inspire people. Need to see evidence of your character. Your character has to be forthcoming at when you're communicating. Because connecting has a lot to do with who you are and letting people know who you are, so what that character is. And then third, what people need to feel. Your passion is what they need to feel. If you're not passionate about what you are out there talking about, they're not going to feel anything from you. Don't try to be inspirational without passion. And passion, if you want to find out if you have passion, ask yourself four questions. Do I believe what I say? There are a lot of speakers that don't even believe what they say themselves. Number two, has it changed me? Number three, do I believe it will help others? And number four, have I seen it change others? So ask those four questions about what you're doing in Manatech and see how you answer those. Some of us have been in this so long that we have no problem with those questions. Other people are going, well, I'm not sure. I don't know. Well, that's when you're not going to be very inspirational for others, when you come with insecurity on those issues. That's why we talk about building confidence a lot, and that's a big part of the network marketing drive. Your confidence in yourself and them, your gratitude, and make sure you show gratitude for them as well. And then, of course, we want to always cause inspiration. Why do we want to be inspiring? Because we want to cause people to take action. Action comes from inspiration. When you put all three of these together to get inspiration, then people inspired do what? They take action. And they're going to take action when you do two things. You have to say the right words at the right time. Timing means everything. In fact, it's part of his book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. He talks about timing being everything. And number two, give people an action plan. So many of us fail to do that. We tell people, oh, yeah, well, okay, let's get you signed up. They have no action plan. That's why it's so important to have an action plan, to be ready to receive them and give them an action plan so they know what their next step is. They can be motivated as all get out, but they're not going to be inspired to take action if they don't know what action to take. You got to give them directional. So when he's a speaker, he tells people, he says he uses the ACT theory. He tells people, put an A next to things that apply. So when you take your notes, put an A next to things you apply, put a C next to things you need to change, and T next to those things you need to teach. And then he always tells his audience to take action, at least one action in the next 24 hours. And you always want to make a commitment to continually inspire others. Okay, I got one more chapter I'll get through in 5 minutes. Give me five more minutes, people. We'll get through this. Connectors. The fifth chapter was connectors live what they communicate. And this is about integrity, right? It's about living your life and being who you say you are. Credibility is currency for leaders and communicators. With it, they are solvent. Without it, they're bankrupt. The only way you build trust from people is that if you live what you communicate. You've got to believe in what you're saying, and you've got to live it, not just say it. As time goes, I love this quote too, as time goes by, the way people live outweighs the words they use. You are your message. You need to be the kind of person you want to connect with. You need to be consistent. And he says he makes suggestions on how to get there. So we got a lot of great suggestions in this chapter. Number one, connect with yourself. First, you got to figure out who you are. Know yourself. That comes to some self-assessments. Set time aside to reflect and journal and pray. And it's not about knowing. It's annoying. You know, who we are is who we choose to be. Everybody get that really clear. You may be something today, but you can choose to be something else tomorrow. So it's about choosing who you are. But you got to get a reality check on who you've been. To start choosing differently. But, you know, first step is knowing yourself. Come to that self-assessment. All of us need to do that. Number two, liking yourself, and that comes from self-talk. Zig Ziglar said the most influential person who will talk to you today is you. You are the most influential person that you're going to talk to. Who influences your life more than you do? You're in control of your life. Who influences you more than you do? You do. So you should be very careful what you say to yourself. And, of course, you know me. I keep promoting the book by Shad Helmstetter, What to Say When You Talk to Yourself. You want to be comfortable in your own skin, know your own strengths, be honest about your weaknesses, and have integrity in every area of your life. That's a magic formula for everybody. Right your wrongs, always acknowledge your mistakes, be accountable. The greatest compliment you ever get from somebody is that they can rely on you, right? They can count on you. When you make a commitment, you create hope. When you keep a commitment, you create trust. So fine line when it comes to our strengths, it's our weaknesses where we really need the accountability. Lead the way you live, same thing. Model what you communicate. Modeling is so critical. It's about integrity between words and actions. That's what living with integrity is. Modeling is living with integrity between the words and our actions. What we say is how we behave. It's kind of like if you get up there and you say, I'm a great, you know, and this happened to me years ago when I got caught up. I was like going out teaching nutrition, working with people all over the country on nutrition, and I'd get back in my hotel room or on an airplane and have a Diet Coke. And it was like, wait a minute, there's something so out of integrity with it. And that's because I was a Diet Coke drinker for years. And you know, and it's a habit that's outrageously inconsistent with who I am and what I profess to be. So look at your habits, look at how you're living your life and say, is it totally consistent with who I say I am or is it something inconsistent? And work on that because it's that inconsistency that'll keep tearing at you and wearing at you. All right? So be consistent. Tell the truth. Credibility is critical. Be vulnerable. That's a hard one for a lot of us to understand. I always thought of vulnerability as weakness, but vulnerability is true strength because only strong people can be vulnerable. And the idea is that you can open yourself up and you can talk about your weaknesses and talk about who you are not because people want to pour into you as well. It opens up the floodgates for people to help you as well, and that builds more synergy and connectedness than anything. So I made a suggestion that today, just sit down with your kids. How many times have you sat down with your kids and talked about who you're not and what your shortcomings are? It's amazing. We always want to point our finger at our spouse and say it's all about him. When we're sitting here with like that biblical concept of why don't you take that log out of your own eye before you try to remove the speck in another's, right? But vulnerability, you're vulnerable when you talk about your inadequacies, aren't you? I'm the same way. I feel the same way, but I still discuss them and talk about them because I know that if I'm clear and I'm honest about them, that's when I can make changes. It's when we don't represent ourselves, who we are, that we're not. Because what is the first step to any change in life? Awareness. So it's about getting that down. Follow the golden rule, right? Treat others as you would have them treat you. And he made the comment, wisdom is knowing the right path to take. Integrity is taking it. I love that as well. Deliver results. People expect you to deliver results. You want to communicate from experience about results you had, not making them up. Credibility connects. In other words, always have credibility. Be honest, trustworthy, high integrity, and you'll have credibility. The true power of connecting with others does not come from superficial interactions with others, smiling at a stranger, being friendly at a food server, or wowing a one-time audience. It comes from connecting with people long-term, and that's our goal. And he closed the book off with talking about Moses. And the reason for this was just to say, you know, there are a lot of people in this world that didn't perceive themselves as leaders. And for those of you who have some biblical knowledge about Moses, you know, he was like ready to run the other direction. I mean, when God approached him and wanted him to lead his people out of Israel, he was like fit to be tied. First of all, he knew he wasn't a good communicator. He knew he wasn't a leader. He knew he wasn't, you know, it was incredible. He knew he wasn't good with people. In fact, the first incident where he tried to influence another person, he ended up killing him. So he wasn't very effective at influence. And he wasn't a good communicator. He wasn't eloquent. So, of course, God sent him with his brother. And then he wasn't a good leader either. I mean, after getting him out of Egypt, he was not particularly successful in leading them any further. There was a reason they spent so many years in the desert, right? And one of the things that he was trying to do is he was also trying to do everything himself, which is a death knell for leaders. Jethro's father-in-law taught him how to appoint others. So there's lessons in all of this. But the moral of the story is Moses took what ability he had and made the most of it. He increased his influence and used it to help an untold number of people. So people, what are you going to do with your talent? That's the question. We all can work on it, and John did a great job of giving us all these great insights. And I just suggest you go back on both outlines from this week and last week and just take your highlighter And go after the ones that really are ones that you can see are needs in your life. And then those are the ones you want to work on. Okay, people, great. Any comments? Sorry we went over today, but we did get through the book. Yoo-hoo! Anyone see how any of this applies to them? You have any ideas or concepts? I'll give you a couple minutes to share if something hit home to you particularly.
Mary Jo, is the book just recently out?
Uh-huh, it's a brand new book, just published. I think you can get it off of Amazon, probably.
And, yep. Will it be at Manifest, you know?
I do not know that. Okay.
This is excellent, excellent.
Isn't it great? Oh, I know. I loved it. That's why I said I needed 2 weeks to go over this book because it's perfect for us. It is our industry. But you know what? When I started going through it, of course, I started thinking about other people I wanted to bless with the book as well because there are just so many arenas in my life that connecting is that's what it is. You know, our lives are about relationships, so it's about connecting and.
Well, you know what, Mary Jo, I've been through all the climber stuff. I don't know if you remember who you're talking to. This is Rebecca, but, you know, and joy is the one thing that I can't live without. And I've just, a lot of circumstances over the last few have just brought me down. And I just heard God say to me the other day, you need more fun in your life. And when you said that diaper one, I just talked because I thought, that is exactly, I could have used that about 20 years ago with my husband.
Right, isn't it fun? Yeah. So what you got to do, Rebecca, you got to let go of all that stuff that you're carrying because you're, you know, it's just stuff you're carrying, right? And you just got to have fun with it. I mean, I'm telling you, I have joy every time I share with people. I have joy. I don't need those past stories, miracle stories. I have so much fun just talking about the importance of what this can do in their lives. I laugh with them, have fun with them. It's a blast. So
right. You
got to start going out and enjoying people again. Absolutely.
Oh, I am. After that, I got that. This is
great.
Really good. Thanks.
Great. Super. Good to hear from you. And I know there are a lot of people on the call that are relating 100% with what you just said. So thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Have a great week. And for those of you coming to Manifest, I'll see you on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, one of those days or maybe many of those days. And just have a terrific week. And we'll be back in touch next Monday morning. We're going to do a recap of Manifest. So don't forget to be on the call next Monday as well. Love you all. Have a great week. Go out there and touch the world. Or should I say, go out there and connect. Okay? All right. Bye-bye, everybody.